That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I'm the most consistent motherfucker you know, Dave Smith. He is Robbie the Fire Bernstein. What's up, my brother? I like your new setup you got there.
That's just when you pull down the backdrop, this is actually my place. So
very nice. So Rob's out in LA. Have fun out there?
Oh my God, the live show we did at Brian's house was unbelievable. Like fans showed up to the middle of nowhere. We had a good time, and now I'm in Koreatown, surrounded by Mexicans. I'm very confused.
That doesn't seem to be what Koreatown should be filled with.
No.
But who am I? Who am I to judge? That's the way humanity works. Sometimes the Mexicans move in on Koreatown's property and take all their stuff. Such
is
nature.
Koreans got to go take over another neighborhood, I guess.
Yep. It's like watching a snake wrestle with a bear. It's just...
confusing.
Never know who's going to win, and it probably shouldn't be happening. All right. probably none of this makes sense. Okay. So, of course, we'll be on the road in just a few days here, going to Reno, Nevada. Hope to see a lot of you guys out there. A lot of stuff going on. I wonder what to start with. All right. Let's start with this, because I thought this was really interesting, that today, across major news publications, it's being reported that Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, has announced that he will not negotiate with the Russians toward a ceasefire if there are any concessions that need to be made. So in other words, he will not negotiate, because that's what negotiating is. So that I just thought that was like a pretty amazing little thing there, where you go, it's really hard to almost keep the narrative straight that the corporate press is putting out, which is like that, you know, oh my God, Russia is this super, you know, dangerous, horrible aggressor that's held, and Vladimir Putin is a war criminal, and he's hell bent on reunifying the Soviet Union. He basically wants to conquer half of Europe again. But also, he's a blundering idiot who can't even pull off this invasion of Ukraine. This is kind of like honestly, this is the narrative out of the corporate press. Both of these things are being put out there as if one doesn't wildly contradict the other. So at the same time as, you know, they're saying Russia is just, it's horrible what they're doing, but also that they can't pull this off. It's been a huge blunder, and Putin is failing, and he can't win the war in Ukraine. But also, they need like $80 billion from us that desperately, or they will lose. You know, it's like these very contradictory ideas. But when you peel through these ridiculous like narratives that contradict themselves, you can see more of the accurate picture. And there it is right in front of you. It's like, well, this is what the whatever it is, the $40 billion with the promise of another $40 billion in weapons. And no, there was no indication that that's the end of it. We'll probably be in the hundreds of billions of dollars of in aid, which just to keep in mind is it's a big deal. You know, I mean, if we when you get up to $80 billion, I forget, we played the clip the other day where Rand Paul was trying to put these numbers in perspective. He was saying this is about as much as Russia spends on their entire military. You know, this is like a big deal, a huge, huge numbers. But this is the result of the money that we've given them. And in fact, this is the stated intention that this is what it'll do. It will prolong the war. Now, does anybody really believe? I mean, if you just want to take like, I'm not saying you know anything for absolute certain, but if you want to say like the likelihood, what is the likelihood that if we hadn't sent all of these weapons into Ukraine, that they would be holding this position of absolutely no negotiations toward a ceasefire? It's less. It's far less likely.
I thought a couple months ago Zelensky was trying to get them to the table, and it sounded like he was willing to even, you know, give up areas. So this is quite a 180.
Yes. Now that they got another $40 billion, he's backed off of him even claiming that they're willing to negotiate. Now he's not willing to negotiate. So in other words, all of this kind of propaganda.
Well, Ukrainians dying just became very lucrative to Zelensky.
Well, that's right. So all of this propaganda from you know, the war party in D.C., from the corporate press, one and the same, and get all these people who are changing their profile pictures to, you know, Ukrainian flags. The result of this is that more Ukrainians are going to die. Just like every policy that comes out of the war party in Washington, D.C., the result is more death and destruction. And it's just it's madness. And you know, it's interesting to see how stubborn, because like war fever is a crazy thing. And the way people respond to initial waves of propaganda really is like unbelievable. It usually starts wearing off and not working as well over time when the truth is a little bit harder to ignore. But you see these people like, yeah, no, why should they negotiate with Russia? Russia's the ones who are the aggressors here. They're invading. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, the reason they should is because less people will die. That's why they should. There's not like some cosmic justice here. And by the way, if there was, Vladimir Putin, who certainly has a lot of blame on his hands, he's not the only one. But the truth is that the Donbass region is very likely not going to go back to being under control of Ukraine. And if you're not even willing to consider that this region, which is majority ethnic Russians, which voted in referendums to be ruled by Moscow rather than Kiev, if you just take it as a given that, no, they must be ruled by Kiev and not by Moscow, then like, okay, fine. Then the war will continue on and a lot more Ukrainians will die, which is a brave sacrifice that many Americans on Twitter are willing to make on behalf of the Ukrainian people. Anyway, it's just this is like what Hillary Clinton has said. This is what a bunch of people in the Biden administration have said. The goal is they're getting exactly what they want, which is to like extend this war and bleed the Russians as much as possible, which it will do. It will certainly hurt the Russian people and the Russian military. But it's also going to hurt the Ukrainian people as well. So there you go. There's your victory in foreign policy for the war party.
Throw some Ukrainian deaths at bleeding Russia dry.
Yep, that basically seems to be the plan here. Go ahead.
Yeah, the one thing, and I don't know if any of this is going to come to be, but it seems like we're in, at least while the Biden administration remains in office, we're in this for the long haul in terms of trying to punish and bleed Russia and get them out of like the international community. But I really wonder if heading into next year, countries like India, China, maybe even Iran, if we kind of almost split the world here and people are going, okay, we will transact in rubles and buy all these materials from you. And you kind of end up with like, I don't think it will be a war situation. I don't think like US and England are going to war with China and Russia. But I do wonder if we take a major hit on our currency and like there's just kind of a almost a clean division of trading partners.
Well, I agree with you. I think that it's more likely that this is going to result in kind of like an economic stratification here, that there's going to be, there are more, you have more and more of these countries who are either, you know, don't really appreciate the American empire because they've kind of been pushed around by it, or are just kind of looking at America and saying, that's not really my bet anymore. My bet isn't on the dollar. My bet is on an alternative to the dollar. Or you have some combination of both, which I think a lot of people fall into. They're both just don't like the American empire and also think like, this is a pretty shaky investment right now. And that's more likely than war, direct war with Russia or China or something like that. But it's also kind of impossible to not notice that the war rhetoric has really heated up around all of these things. And I think part of that is that there's going to have to be like a real demonizing of anybody who makes this move out of the kind of propaganda machine from DC that, oh my God, look at these horrible people who are doing this awful thing by like not trading their oil in US dollars or something like that. But yeah, there's no question. This is, you know, it's, you wonder how much of a factor in this is like, obviously there are factors like there are weapons companies who are making enormous amounts of money. I mean, if you look at like the breakdown of where that $40 billion actually goes, it's like it was money going to like Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and the CIA and stuff like that. So there's, you don't have to look too deep to see, find like the vested interest in pushing this stuff. But also, you wonder if there isn't so much hubris involved in some of these decisions making by the politicians that just think like, oh yeah, look at Russia. They're even struggling to take Ukraine. This is nothing. And they don't realize that it's like, yeah, there's a dangerous domino effect that could kind of fall down here, where a lot of these different countries could end up bailing on the dollar. And I mean, if you see that, oof, you know, so you think inflation's bad now.
As long as we're just being wildly speculative, have you seen any of the theories that Putin's got like cancer, or that, you know, even within Russia, they might replace him?
I've heard whispers of this from the beginning of the war in Ukraine that he was going to get, ditched by the oligarchs who kind of prop him up. I don't know. I haven't put too much stock into any of that. But why? What are you hearing?
No, I'm just saying, as long as we're being speculative, that's kind of on the table as the theoretical win for like the Biden administration. And it's kind of, the New York Post has been pushing that story the most. They had the video of him holding onto a table, kind of shaking. And then they were claiming that he went into treatment a couple days ago. So the claim is like the guy's over the hill and sick, and he gambled on a war that he can't win because he's crazy and towards the end, and that, you know, maybe people will get sick of it. But It's as speculative as our theory that people might move away from the dollar and, you know, Russia and China come out ahead.
It seems to be even more speculative than that, but who the hell knows? I mean, I guess it's impossible to know these things for sure. From, you know, I had heard people kind of suggesting that the oligarchs were really pissed off with Vladimir Putin, which is
just quite, lost their boats.
Quite possible. Yeah, I mean, well, look, they've lost some assets, and this was no question a very risky move for Russia to, you know, the forget what the truth of the situation or the backstory or how Russia was provoked in several ways. The truth is that this was a naked, brutal aggression, and it's a PR nightmare for Russia. They now are no longer able to like sell themselves as like, hey, we're kind of the innocent ones being imposed upon. They're seen as the aggressors by large portions of the world, including the most powerful, you know, governments in the world. So that's an issue for them. Speaking of you know, war rhetoric heating up, Joe Biden, who, you know, sometimes let's just play the clip of what Joe Biden said the other day, and then we could discuss it.
You didn't want to get involved in the Ukraine conflict militarily for obvious reasons. Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are.
That's a commitment we made. That's a commitment we made. We are not. Look, here's the situation. We agree with a one China policy. We signed on to it and all the attendant agreements made from there. But the idea that that it can be taken by force, just taken by force, is just not appropriate. It will dislocate the entire region and be another action similar to what happened in Ukraine. And so it's a burden that is even stronger.
You know, there's a thing sometimes with politicians that disgusts most normal people, and me and you are probably no different than those people, that when politicians always give a politician-y answer and they just don't directly answer a question, and they just kind of like avoid it, or they answer the question they want to answer rather than the direct question that was asked to them, and they're not just like blunt and upfront and honest about how they feel. But this is one of the rare instances where I'd actually prefer to see that. Like, just don't. It's so incredibly reckless to an insane level to just bluntly just say, yeah, we'd have a military confrontation with China. Yeah, we'll just get into a hot H-bomb war with China over Taiwan. When it's not even as if it's like at a place where you need to say something like that. You're just really being asked a hypothetical question by some journalist. It's not like China's moving in right now and you have to say this. It's like, let's just threaten China with a war. While we're already dealing with this crazy threat of getting into a hot war with Russia, let's just bring China on board too. Like, what's baffling about it is that there's no even like strategy here. I mean, not saying that I'm one who's like suggesting some type of like aggressive geopolitical like war strategy, but if you were playing that game, the strategy would be to pit Russia and China against each other, not unify them in opposition to the United States of America. That would not be a smart strategy. So instead, he's just like, yeah, fuck you, Putin. Putin needs to be overthrown. And you know what? I'll go to war with China too, if I think about it. Like, Biden just letting it rip. You can tell Biden didn't even think about the question. He just shot her back an immediate yes. It's like it's this weird thing where he's like this old, frail, senile guy. So he has to prove to you how tough he is. You know, like that. I think that's a lot of the psychology of what's going on here. But talk about just like reckless and idiotic, the idea that somehow it would be a worthwhile decision to say that if China moves in on Taiwan, we'll go to war with China. It's insanity.
Well, this is, he really looks like a guy you just woke up in between naps. This is like when I visit my grandfather and he's sitting in a chair. You wake him up to say, yeah, okay. Like, he's literally standing up there. Like,
you weren't even
asleep.
There. Yeah, you weren't even there for that conversation, Joe Biden.
And so this is similar to when with the Ukraine thing, because, you know, the White House is like, that's not an official statement. We haven't changed our policy. Apparently the issue, and no one's talking about it, this is Biden. He likes just telling us his emotions, which makes me think maybe he's got a female writer there that they have to fire, where, you know, he's just trying to get things off his chest. But my biggest question, who gets to decide that when the president says something that's not the official policy? Who is, like, when we get a statement from the White House, hey, that's not official policy, who's that person? You know what I mean? Because that's the guy who's really in charge. Can we meet him? Who gets to, the president goes out and says something, and then you get a statement from the White House, hey, that's not our official policy. Well, that the guy in charge just said it is. So who?
And they almost like they react with like this thing, like whenever they're said that, they're like, that's not our official policy. Like, you see what our policy is, like as if the janitor just told us that this is what he was going to do. But you're like, no, this is like seems like a pretty important guy in your operation there. Right. Like, this is, oh, I'm sorry. I was under the impression that he's the commander in chief of the military. So if he tells us this, that kind of carries some weight. And of course, like, even if your defense here is like, well, as you made the comparison, which is a very good one, that they say, well, no, look, so Joe Biden said that Vladimir Putin needs to be overthrown, but regime change is not the official U.S. policy. It's like, okay, even if that's true, and let's say, you know, given the most generous interpretation, this is like, oh, no, but when Joe Biden's actually sitting down to make policy, he's saying, no, 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 that's not the policy. But when he's answering, you know, when he's talking to the press, he's saying, yeah, we need to do this. You know, how wildly reckless is that? even under like the most generous, you know, interpretation that it is, like, this is insane. So then you just go out and just say these like provocative things that are not even your policy, that you're not prepared to back up with actual policy. You know what I mean? But you'll just say it. Like, I don't know, if you just think about this on like a human level, it's like, if there's like some big dude at a bar and you're at that bar and you're just telling everyone, it's like, I'm going to take this guy outside and kick his ass. You're just telling everybody who will listen, and you know, the guy can hear you, you know? And then you're like, oh no, by the way, like, I'm not really planning on fighting this guy. It's like, all right, well, you probably shouldn't be making these threats unless you're very prepared to go do that. Seems like a common sense position here. And by the way, you fighting this guy kills everybody at the bar. So that's also something to maybe think about. All right. Anything else on that, Rob? Or I guess we can move on.
Well, the other thing, I thought the whole tour was kind of goofy, because I guess he's going over there to kind of, I mean, the whole thing with Trump was, this guy's going to be an embarrassment on the world stage.
Yeah.
And now you're sending Biden over to these countries to, like, I guess, shore up our relations. Would anything scare you more than a meeting with Biden? Like, I'm sure if you sit down with Biden, you must be like, all right, call up Russia and find out if we can still buy stuff for rubles. Like, is that deal still on the table? Because I have no faith in this other guy.
It is really something that it's like that the whole pitch was like, Donald Trump's an embarrassment, and the Biden pitch is the adults are back in charge. And you do realize, and it's not that Trump didn't have his own kind of embarrassing qualities about him, but oh my God, there's the embarrassment of this guy being your fucking leader.
At least he wasn't asleep at meetings. He was high on Sudafed, but I'll take that over.
Yeah, really. Oh my God. Really just something. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Stamps.com. It's hard enough keeping your e-commerce business running smoothly with limited resources. So why not simplify shipping so you can worry about more important things? Stamps.com eliminates all of your shipping stress by integrating with the most popular online shopping platforms to make labeling a breeze. Plus, get access to deeply discounted shipping options and save about 100 trips to the post office with Stamps.com. For over 20 years now, Stamps.com has helped over a million businesses save time and money on shipping. Stamps.com gets you incredible discounts on shipping, up to 40% off United States Postal Service rates, and up to 76% off UPS rates. It automatically connects with your stores, bringing together all of your shipping info from Amazon, Etsy, Shopify, eBay, and many more. Simply print your shipping label from your standard printer, stick them to your package, then schedule a pickup or drop them off. No traffic, no lines. With Stamps.com's tracking tools and automated delivery notification emails, you can avoid those dreaded, where's my package? Where's my return status messages? And if you ever have a question, Stamps.com's award-winning US-based shipping support team is ready to help. So stop worrying about shipping. Start saving time and money today with Stamps.com. There's no risk. When you use my promo code PROBLEM, you'll get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital shipping scale. No long-term commitments, no contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in PROBLEM. That's Stamps.com, promo code PROBLEM. Stamps.com, easy e-commerce shipping for less. All right, let's get back into the show. All right, so switching gears a little bit, there was a pretty huge story that was out all over. It's been all over the press. There was one article that was written a couple days ago in the Wall Street Journal that I wanted to read here on the show, because I thought this was really interesting. But it's a big story that, of course, is being underreported. Again, it's one of these stories that, like, it's not that it's not being reported. It is. And I'm about to read a Wall Street Journal piece about it. And it's been published in several, major, online sites have written about this. It's just that if the corporate press were not so dishonest, this would be like the number one story that they were talking about all, the time, because they would have to feel some obligation to correct the record for what they put out into the world for three straight years, even more, I suppose. I guess you could say four straight years. Some of them still put it out. Now, of course, this is about the Trump Russia conspiracy stuff that people heard so much about, that the corporate press, I would say, obsessively reported on. And this is, you know, this is kind of one of the tactics of the corporate press, you know, and this is true in general with just people who talk about, you know, politics and journalists and political commentators, is that you can say that as long as they kind of write one article about some of these things, they can claim, well, technically we reported on this, but there's, if you look at what is amplified compared to what isn't amplified, you really see the difference. And so, for example, if I were to say that the corporate press just isn't, like, they don't cover the war in Ukraine nearly enough, or if I were to say they didn't cover Obama's, like, drone bombing campaign or Trump's drone bombing campaign, or they didn't cover, like, you know, the NDAA acts and all the stuff that's in those that Obama and Trump would sign, you know, every year. Someone could come back to me and say, well, look, here's a New York Times article about that. So see, they did. They covered it, you know. But if you were to say, take the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and, like, all these kind of, like, different corporate media, you know, apparatuses, and you were to say, compare the amount of times, let's say this year, just to take random thing, this year, compare the amount of times that they've talked about the war in Yemen versus the don't say gay bill, it'd be like 1,000 to 1. Like 1,000 to 1, they talk about this shit rather than the other thing. So the thing that they were obsessively talking about for 3 years straight was, of course, Trump Russia collusion. And we talked a lot about that on this show, and telling everybody that the whole thing was bullshit. Now, any honest person who's been paying attention to this, any honest person who's been paying attention to this shit should have known this for a long time now. That the whole thing was complete bullshit. However, not that we need it anymore, because we've really already had everything come out from the fucking declassified FISA warrants to the Mueller report itself, to all of the different, like, you know, like, pieces of information that have come out. It's been very clear for a while. However, not that we needed it, but we got more. And basically what's happened here is that when Hillary Clinton's lawyers is on trial, and so members of her campaign, including her campaign manager, have been forced to testify under oath. And basically, in order to try to help this guy, they have to tell the truth about this, and also to not risk, you know, perjuring themselves and getting in a lot of trouble. So anyway, we'll read through a little bit of this, and we can discuss. Go ahead.
It is, though, what's currently going on is half cover up, and that the judge prior to this kind of blocked basically looking into Hillary Clinton at all.
Yes.
And for, right. Also, the fact that this stuff, the federal court stuff, is not done on camera, that we're watching, like, Johnny Depp, Amber Heard, mm-hmm. and everyone can have a public opinion on that. But when it comes to this or the Epstein case, we can't actually watch these things, and we're just looking at the reporting. I think that's criminal. But to bring it home on specifically this, so the lawyer admitted, or it actually wasn't the lawyer, it was the campaign person admitted, yes. to the fact that they went to her before bringing it to the press, but they've protected her in seemingly claiming that she was not aware that it was being brought to the FBI. Now, that's clearly not true.
There's no way that's true, but that is at least right. what they're saying.
So
as of right
the claim
now.
Is essentially that she got behind it as far as taking the story and going to the press.
And now, you would think that yeah. Hillary Clinton and her team would at least be smart enough that she's probably never going to put in writing anywhere that she's aware that this is being taken to the three-letter agencies. And so right. probably they know that they're never going to be proven wrong. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be a very tough thing to prove that she knew about this. But the idea, it takes quite a leap of faith to assume that Hillary Clinton didn't know that this was also going on, seeing as how this was the biggest thing happening in her campaign.
And she hired the sneaky rats that will go do this shit. That's exactly the people she wants working for, is the people. And just last thing before we do get into the article, I think the news story here should be about Jake Sullivan. It should be about, how is there a person working in the Biden administration running our defense and national security strategy that also worked up the conspiracy to unseat and undermine the last president? I mean, if you've ever seen a more transparent example of a deep state at work, it's Jake Sullivan.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right now. So the piece is called "Hillary Clinton Did It." Her 2016 campaign manager says she approved a plan to plant a false Russia claim with a reporter. Into the article. The Russia-Trump collusion narrative of 2016 and beyond was a dirty trick for the ages, and we now know that it came from the top. Candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton. That was the testimony Friday by 2016 Clinton campaign manager Robbie Mook in federal court. And while this news is hardly a surprise, it's still bracing to find her fingerprints on the political weapon. Mr. Mook testified as a witness in a special counsel John Durham's trial of Michael Sussman, the lawyer accused of lying to the FBI. In 2016, Mr. Sussman took claims of a secret Trump connection to Russia's Alpha Bank to the FBI and said he wasn't acting on behalf of any client. Prosecutors say he was working for the Clinton campaign. Prosecutors presented evidence this week that Mr. Sussman worked with cyber researchers and opposition research firm Fusion GPS to produce the claims on behalf of the Clinton campaign and to feed them to the FBI. An FBI agent testified that a bureau analysis quickly rejected the claims as implausible. Mr. Sussman had pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors asked Mr. Mook about his role in funneling the Alpha Bank claims to the press. Mr. Mook admitted the campaign lacked expertise to vet the data, yet the decision was made by Mr. Mook's policy advisor, Jake Sullivan, now President Biden's national security advisor, communications director Jennifer Palmieri, and campaign chair John Podesta, to give the Alpha Bank claims to a reporter. Mr. Mook said Mrs. Clinton was asked about the plan and approved it. A story on the Trump Alpha Bank allegations then appeared in Slate, a left-leaning online publication. All right. So just to pause right there, because there's a lot. So here you have the, okay. So I want to try to take everything we have here in steps, right? And to really see how clear this is. Now, I guess the most important part is that, yes, we were right about everything. But now that we've established that, and it's not as if this is unique to us, everybody who was honest and paying attention was right about this, I think. So just keep in mind here that they are making the ridiculous, you know, denial that Hillary Clinton didn't have anything to do with this being brought to the FBI, only being brought to the media. But they're admitting that she agreed to bring this to the media, right? But you would think, so at the very least, you go, okay, so for years, while the Trump-Russia collusion thing was like dominating the news, it's not only like Hillary Clinton didn't say anything, didn't go, oh, hey, I mean, you know, we literally made up a bullshit story and got this into Slate. That's how this whole thing started, was a lie from us for political reasons. It's not even that. It's not that she just didn't say anything and kept her mouth shut, which would be bad enough. But I don't know, Rob, if you remember Hillary Clinton's speeches or interviews or books on the subject, but Hillary Clinton was an active participant in this whole thing. I mean, she was going out there and saying, yes, I should be president. Here's what happened. Donald Trump colluded with Vladimir Putin to rob me of my rightful place as the president. She was out there saying it. What a, like, as if we needed more evidence, but what a fucking lying sociopath Hillary Clinton is, that she knows damn well where this bullshit started. It was her and her campaign. And she still goes out there and goes along with the whole thing for the purpose of nothing other than her own vengeance and her own kind of like ego. Like, let me make sure that this isn't viewed as a legitimate loss by me, with obviously doing nothing but like tearing up the country apart. Like, it's, you know, like, this is obviously like detrimental for the entire country, the sitting president, you know, all this shit they say about patriotism and this and that, and Donald Trump doesn't care about all of these institutions. Well, here you are spreading lies, which you know are lies, which originated from you and your campaign, to undermine the sitting president of the United States of America. Now, it's funny, too, that they always hit Trump for the birtherism stuff, because he was like undermining the sitting president with, and the birtherism stuff is stupid, but man, this is like so much more fucked up. Like, you're the one who made up this lie. You know what I mean? Like, it's like unbelievable. It was like if you found out that Donald Trump was the originator of the rumor that Barack Obama wasn't born in Hawaii and that he knew he was born in Hawaii the whole time and was going out and spreading this shit. It's like much worse. There's layers more to it than that. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Novo. Be your own boss in 2022. Join the over 100,000 other customers who have ditched their old clunky banks for a streamlined, no hidden fees banking app that does the work for you and already works with popular tools you use every day. Novo is the number one business banking app because it's built from the ground up to be powerfully simple and free business banking that Money Magazine called the best business checking account of 2021. With Novo, there are no minimum balances, no transaction limits, and no hidden fees. Novo offers in-app invoicing and reserves, which are buckets for big expenses or taxes. Sign up for free in under 10 minutes at banknovo.com/POTP. They'll send you a virtual card to use while your physical card is mailed to you. No delays. And here's a great bonus for our listeners. Access to over $5,000 in perks. Free and discounted access to services you already use, like Stripe, Salesforce, QuickBooks, Snapchat, Google Ads credits, and so much more. Go check this out this year. Get your free business banking account in just 10 minutes at banknovo.com/POTP. That's banknovo.com/POTP to sign up for free. And the only way to get access to the over $5,000 of perks and discounts I mentioned earlier just for signing up. One more time, banknovo.com/POTP. All right, let's get back into the show. The other thing that's pretty interesting here, Rob, which I know you jumped on when we were like texting back and forth, is the Jake Sullivan aspect of this. So Jake Sullivan, who they say the decision was made by Mr. Mook and policy advisor Jake Sullivan, he is currently President Biden's national security advisor. So how about that? I don't know. Anything you want to add on that, Rob?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's the deep state. When the liberals try and pretend, what is this deep state that people talk about? It's a national security apparatus that's pushing wars that does not work in the interest of the American people. And so you have we know that Brennan was in on this whole thing. So now you've got this other guy who apparently helped cook up this lie to undermine Trump and his entire presidency. And now how does that guy have a job? I mean, it's not so much how does he have a job, but how is the media not all over this and going, wait a second, why is that guy in this post if he was clearly involved in this hoax? He probably shouldn't be in that job, or he should probably at least be brought up in front of, the Senate, whatever committee on TV to kind of answer questions about who's he working for in government? I mean, that doesn't that border on treason or something to totally cook up a lie? And I'm sure he was involved in it after Trump was in office. I'm sure he didn't just walk away from this Russia collusion story.
Yeah, it is certainly, I mean, the guy is straight up a traitor to his country, no question. So let me read from this next paragraph here, because it gets even more down to like this to me really exposes how this system works and what dishonest pieces of shit these people are. Okay, so on October 31st, 2016, Mr. Sullivan issued a statement mentioning the Slate story, writing, quote, "This could be the most direct link yet between Donald Trump and Moscow." Mrs. Clinton tweeted Mr. Sullivan's statement with the comment, computer scientists have apparently uncovered a covert server linking the Trump Organization to a Russian-based bank. Apparently is doing a lot of the work in that sentence, as the Wall Street Journal opinion board there. But so now you see how it works, right? Hillary Clinton tweets out, well, would you looky looky here at this article in Slate? Man, apparently they've linked this whole thing together. This seems to be pretty damning. Knowing full well, as according to the testimony of her, the under oath testimony of her campaign manager, knowing full well that she signed off on sending this story to Slate, she's still so fucking dishonest that she'll tweet out like, oh, wow, look at what Slate found here. Well, apparently this is proof of this, even though they knew this was bullshit and they sent the story to Slate. Like, just the intense dishonesty of these people on full display here is like, it's just wonderful to see exposed. Okay, back to the art. Oh, go ahead.
No, it's just the humor of her being like, as every one of our intelligence agencies have said, or like, yeah, with the information you fucking handed them.
Yes, which you knew was bullshit.
Yeah, and there's a great article on Zero Hedge today that was basically putting out the question of how did $40 million and 2 years of the Mueller thing not uncover this aspect of it in any capacity?
That is a really important question to ask. I mean, sure, the Mueller investigation basically concluded that they couldn't find any evidence that the charge was true, that Trump was involved in some conspiracy. But yeah, they never came out with this.
You know,
they never figured this part out.
There's a great negotiating book called Never Split the Difference. It's from a guy who was like an FBI negotiator from like hostage situations. Mm-hmm. And he's got a couple of points in the book where he references Mueller and he speaks about him as being like kind of the sharpest guy at the FBI. And then the one time we saw him was at that hearing when he basically, he was doing an impression of Joe Biden. Now that's essentially what he was doing, where he's just sitting there for 3 hours, confused and tired and like just a total act, what an unbelievable show that guy put on to pretend and kind of get out of that, you know, answering for what had happened over like, I don't remember, I can't answer, just half falling asleep and just confused. They know what they did here.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, no question about that. All right, let me okay. Back to the article. In short, the Clinton campaign created the Trump Alpha allegations, fed it to a credulous press that failed to confirm the allegations, but ran with them anyway, then promoted the story as if it was legitimate news. The campaign also delivered the claim to the FBI, giving journalists another excuse to portray the accusations as serious and perhaps true. So you see how this whole game works. It's all like a circular thing. It starts with one bullshit. You feed it to the press. Then you go, oh, well, look, this is being reported. Then you feed it to the FBI. Then the press goes, FBI is looking into this, blah, blah, blah. And everyone's acting as if there's something corroborating their story, but it's all the same thing. That was one lie. This is kind of how this is like a well-known trick in politics. You feed a story to a news publication, then you have cover to come out and say it's being reported that so-and-so. And then on top of that, in this case, they also then feed it to these intelligence agencies and go, oh, look, the FBI is looking into blah, blah, blah. Just all so crazy. And they all know that they're doing it. Okay, most of the press will ignore this news, but the Russia-Trump narrative that Mrs. Clinton sanctioned did enormous harm to the country. It disgraced the FBI, humiliated the press, and sent the country on a 3-year investigation to nowhere. Vladimir Putin never came close to doing as much disinformation damage. I gotta say, that's a powerful paragraph there. I'm going to read that one more time because this is a really powerful thing for the Wall Street Journal to say. Most of the press will ignore this news, but the Russia-Trump narrative that Mrs. Clinton sanctioned did enormous harm to the country. It disgraced the FBI, humiliated the press, and sent the country on a 3-year investigation to nowhere. Vladimir Putin never came close to doing as much disinformation damage. Here's what I'll just say about this. They are right to say this. Now, I would probably have a bone to pick where I actually think the fact that it disgraced the FBI and humiliated the press is the best thing that came out of all of this. I think if these organizations are this pathetic, they deserve to be humiliated. If they fail the American people this much, then good, they deserve that. You can still see a hint in here from the editorial board at the Wall Street Journal, or maybe more than a hint, that somehow these institutions must be revered and it's so damaging to the country that they've all been humiliated. But I would feel quite differently. And I think this, it's almost like proof by this happening that they do not deserve to be revered. The other thing is that while I appreciate this very powerful article and paragraph being written by the Wall Street Journal, I gotta say, if a couple idiot comedians like me and you can be right about this thing the whole way through, then like this stuff should have been pumped out there during the time. You know, it didn't need to wait till this trial and this testimony. We had all the evidence we needed and more for years now. So it's crazy to just see it coming out now. Anyway, that is the that's the conclusion of the piece. It's a short one. It was short and sweet, and I thought it was worth reading on the show today. So look, I understand we live in a kind of like a post rise of the COVID regime time now, with the tensions in Russia and all of this stuff, and this almost does, you know, seem like a little bit of a story that's just in the past, but then again, that's kind of how they always win these games, is because by the time they admit how egregious it is, it's like, I know the war in Iraq was a fucking whole thing built off lies and all that, but like, whatever, it was 20 years ago. What are you going to do? And okay, this isn't 20 years ago. It's like 3 years ago, but
damage done.
Yeah. But that's the point, is that they really did like that. It's like even people who think that they're somewhat aware of how corrupt politicians are, of how dishonest the corporate press is, it's just like, don't forget, like, while they have the nerve to be setting up disinformation boards and then pausing them. But that they don't even, you know, think about that, right? Like Joe Biden wants his Department of Homeland Security to be ruling what is disinformation and misinformation. His own national security advisor was the guy involved in the biggest piece of disinformation. Well, I was going to say the biggest piece of disinformation in recent years, but I guess perhaps over the last 2 years that was topped. But certainly from the period of 2016 to the beginning of 2020, this just enormous story. And if you just think about the gravity of the accusations that were being made on a daily basis on all of the largest media outlets across the country, the accusations was that the sitting president of the United States of America is guilty of treason, that he is a traitor to his country, but is currently the commander in chief. Like, this was like the wildest claims of like the John Birch Society in like the 50s and shit like that. Yet it was coming through all of the most like approved, all of the most like official institutions. And the damage from this is really enormous to the country. And it's not, it's that, number one, this destroyed the prospect of what Donald Trump ran on, which was to have like a reasonable relationship with Russia. That was what Donald Trump ran on in 2016, was like, why don't we get along with Russia and not move toward hostilities with them, but rather move toward like, you know, detente, have a better like understanding, a better relationship. And, you know, that was destroyed because he was being accused publicly of being a Russian agent. And so he had to prove how not much of a Russian puppet he was. And so he spent his whole administration proving that. And that had a lot of things involved in it, like pulling out of the INF treaty, like sending weapons into Ukraine. And look at where we are right now. You know, the more you look back at it, like, oh, that was a really big fucking deal. Like, this is not nothing. It's not like, oh, this was just a waste of time and the press made themselves look like idiots. They pushed us more and more into a dangerous, inflammatory relationship with Russia that now has us on the brink of a military confrontation with them. This was a very big deal that they pulled this off. People who were responsible for this should go to jail. And then the truth is that basically no one is, right? There's this one lawyer who's on trial now. I think there was one FBI guy who got convicted, but I don't believe he did any jail time. I could be wrong about that. But it was the guy who wrote up the FISA application. He got in trouble. I forget exactly what his punishment was, but he lied so blatantly to the FISA courts that they got him. But it's like everybody else kind of just skates and walks free. And it's unbelievable what they did to this country, to make up a lie on that level, that the sitting president is a traitor to his country, in bed with a hostile foreign power, all this stuff. And it's not like, just from what you see here in this piece, there's not even like the plausible deniability like there are of some of these other things, which are even still pretty thin. But it's not like they go, oh no, but I really thought Saddam had weapons of mass destruction, as some congressman could claim who supported the war. You know, oh, I don't know, that's what I was told. I thought they really had them. It's like very clear here from Hillary Clinton and her campaign. They all knew about this the whole time. None of them said a word. None of them, forget even like, even if you go to like, okay, they were in campaign mode and they were playing really dirty politics, let's say, right? So give them the excuse of that this is the middle of a campaign. You're playing really dirty politics to try to get your candidate to win. Okay, fine. So let's say I give you that. You even have a rationalization for why you think Hillary Clinton would be a much better president than Donald Trump. So you got to play dirty politics during the election season of 2016. Okay, but you lose. January of 2017, Donald Trump is sworn in as the president of the United States of America. And this stuff is still dominating in the news every single day. You don't feel an obligation to come out and say something at that point. And in fact, then you got Hillary Clinton going out there and continuing to lead the charge of launching the accusation that he's in bed with Vladimir Putin. None of these people on the campaign felt some obligation to just go to the press and be like, hey, guys, this is all bullshit. And we started it. And we know that. No, it's not till one of your fucking slimy lawyers is on trial and you're forced to testify under oath that you admit all this shit. And of course, as the Wall Street Journal puts in that sentence, I mean, what a disgrace to the FBI and the CIA. They don't mention this, but as you did in the Zero Hedge article, mentioned this. What a disgrace to Robert Mueller and the entire like special prosecutors team that they couldn't find. It's like every major institution you just see being destroyed over this. That's the best part. That's the best part of all of it. That they all look like assholes. All right, guys, let's take a moment and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Crowd Health. I love this company. It's brilliant. You got to check this out. For many people in the U.S. concerned about the cost of health insurance, there's no good options. You either go uninsured or you pay through the nose for a high deductible plan with questionable coverage. It's like being stuck with an outdated cable TV plan and not knowing that Netflix exists. CrowdHealth is a community of people who are tired of paying for a broken system, a place where you can get a simple, flexible, and affordable way to pay for your health care. Being in the CrowdHealth community can save hundreds of dollars monthly and put thousands back into your pocket. Their membership is a monthly subscription. You can start or stop whenever it's convenient for you. It's simple and transparent pricing is customized to fit your needs. CrowdHealth lowers your monthly healthcare costs and you can see any doctor you want. Using their app, you can find nearly any doctor in the country ranked from 1 to 5 stars. You scan bills, throw them away. CrowdHealth takes it from there. Press a button to receive virtual care anytime, anywhere. This is a community of health-conscious members who want to get and stay healthy in return for lower prices. CrowdHealth gets rid of the insurance middlemen and passes the savings to its members. 100% of your monthly membership pay for actual healthcare costs, helping the whole CrowdHealth community stay healthy while keeping more money in your pocket. CrowdHealth is able to offer amazing prices because of its community of health-conscious members. offers, but they have an amazing offer just for my listeners. Get your first 6 months for just $99 per month. That's a savings of almost 50% versus their standard pricing and a lot less than one of those crappy high deductible plans. Just go to joincrowdhealth.com/99 and enter the promo code POTP at sign up. That's joincrowdhealth.com/99 and the promo code is POTP. Crowd Health is not health insurance. It's a community-powered alternative. Terms and conditions may apply. All right, let's get back into the show. Anything else you want to add to that, Rob?
No, I think it's crazy that this isn't getting more coverage and that this isn't becoming a big headline of let's look at the deep state. What happened here?
Yeah, well, that's right. And it's not just the deep state, right? It's the Clinton campaign, it's the deep state, and it's the corporate press for all kind of working together in this thing. But of course, also, this is, at least for now, this is a technique that is still somewhat effective, as I was mentioning earlier. It's not what it's not just what you talk about, but it's what you prioritize and what you talk about the most and what you emphasize. And this is true across the board. You know, like one of the things that I talk about this with libertarians all the time, is that I think that, to me, what's more important than whether someone agrees with me on like every philosophical abstraction that there is, or if we both have like the same unified theory of how libertarian ethics ought to apply in every different like the legal situation or something like that. It's what's much more important to me is what people focus on. Like, what is your primary issue? What do you really talk about the most? What do you focus about the most? What makes your blood boil the most? What do you give the most attention? You know, if you like, for example, if you look at me and you, I think there's really no, like, if you just look at this show and you go, what are the things that get the most attention on this show that get me and you the most worked up and pissed off about? You know what I mean? Like, or that get us the most, you know what I mean? Like that we like amplify the most. You'd have to say, well, it's basically like wars, the COVID insanity over the last 2 years and the complete destruction of the economy, you know, like and I think that's it. That's like, I think we're putting the emphasis right on what it should be on, like the things that actually destroy people's lives the most. Now, do me and you, do we see completely eye to eye on like, whether every sidewalk should be privatized? I don't even know. Honestly, I don't even fucking know. Me and you talked about like minarchy versus anarchy once, I think like 6 years ago. Me and you had a debate on the show about it. I have no idea if you've changed your mind on that. I fucking literally, I literally broadcast with you 3 times a week. We've never talked about it since. Not to mention we're on long car rides together. We do gigs together. We're friends. We hang out. It's never come up because I just don't fucking care. It just doesn't matter. It's like, I don't know. By the way, we should privatize the sidewalks and maybe we'll get in a conversation one time and I'll be able to convince you we should. But who really, and then, you know, this is true again. It's true of a lot of like there are a lot of like left wingers out there who like all they talk about all day long is like the Green New Deal and democratizing, you know, the workplace and like all these other things, who might actually be really good on war. You know what I mean? But like it never comes up or something like that. And so that to me is not that valuable of an ally. But if there is a left winger who's always talking about war and how evil it is, and then, you know, if you ask them, they were like, oh yeah, I'm for the Green New Deal and this other stuff, I'm more likely to be like, okay, I kind of like that person, because at least you prioritize the thing that you're really good on. And likewise, there are those libertarians out there who just all day are screaming about like transphobia and racism, who might be, if you ask them, really good on some of these other issues. But it's like, if that's what you prioritize and that's like what, then you're basically useless. Like it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like it's, you're not like actually focusing on what matters. And this, in the same sense, that's how this game is played. That they focus so much on the Trump-Russia collusion story, and then they focus so little on the, oh, by the way, the whole thing was bullshit. And the way it works is that you'll still, if you take an opinion poll tomorrow, there'll still be some percentage of the country who believes Trump and Russia colluded. that they were involved in some conspiracy.
They just couldn't prove it.
Yeah. Or right, like, or they're basically be like, oh, we know that. Or they saw something where they went, well, I think there were like a few dozen of Trump's people who were prosecuted. You know, like, you remember they used to like put those things out?
Right.
Oh, the Mueller investigation resulted in all of these people being charged with crimes, which is true. But none of them had to do with a Russian conspiracy. They were all like unrelated. Oh, we caught this guy for not like fucking some tax crime from 20 years ago because they looked into everyone's shit. So like that, you know, so that's the way, that's the effect that this game that they play has, is that there'll still be a percentage. And I'm like, I don't even know, I'd have to look at these polls, but if you look at it, it's not like a negligible number. It's like, there's still like a fairly large percentage of the population who just like, oh yeah, no, Donald Trump was involved in a conspiracy with the Russians. We know that. I heard that over and over again from all these people who know what they're talking about. So that's the way the game's played. And so that's what we're in the business of exposing that bullshit. All right. We're going to wrap up on that.
Before we call it an episode, I want to out at trendy hotels that don't give you chairs. Whatever I'm sitting on, I've been on bike seats more comfortable. And I also don't understand these bathrooms with clear walls. I just don't get like
clear walls. What do you mean?
Yeah, they're like doing like the smoky screen. So I guess like, you know, you can see the outline of someone taking a shit. I just don't get it. Just put a fucking door there.
You don't want someone to see the outline of you taking a shit?
Not so much. No.
Yeah, no, it's not great. No, it's right. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go for it.
No,
I don't have that much more on.
I was going to say, if you bring a girl back, that's really like, not going to be fun for you.
My move is I take a lot of business calls in the lobby.
Yeah, there you go.
Everybody, I got summer porch tour dates. Look in the episode description. The one in LA was an absolute blast. You guys can go check out the footage of that. It's up on my YouTube. And next city coming up is Pittsburgh, which I believe is even it's like in a weekend or two. So pick up your tickets, come hang out.
All right, sounds good. And I think we're basically sold out for Reno and Chicago. There might be a few tickets left for that late show in Reno. I'm not sure, but thanks to everybody who buying those tickets. I can't wait. We'll see you there. We got a lot more fun shit coming up. So thanks for listening. Peace.
So I actually think the most important question of this evening, Chris, is finally, will Donald Trump admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this? And make it clear that he will not have the help of Putin in this election, that he rejects Russian espionage against Americans, which he actually encouraged in the past. Those are the questions we need answered. We've never had anything like this happen in any of our elections before.